Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with the Capital One Venture X Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details. Hey, everybody, if you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and Jerry's here too. So that makes this a rough and tumble, rootin' tootin' episode of Stuff You Should Know. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Pretty good. You just celebrated a birthday just 24 hours ago and less.
Yeah, I did.
Happy birthday, Chuck.
Thanks, man.
How do you feel?
On the go.
Good?
I feel great. I'm tired today, but not because of birthdays. I'm tired today.
Do you remember the times back, years back, when you would be tired because of your birthday?
Right, exactly. It's like now, the day after,
Right, exactly. Now you're just tired because you're a full year older.
Yeah, I was tired before my birthday, too.
Right. But we're not talking about being tired or birthdays, Chuck, are we? We're talking about playing cards.
Yeah, this one, Dave Bruce helped us out. This is chock full of fun little nuggets that I think next time you're playing cards with people, you can just kind of pepper these in.
Yeah, and they'll love you for it. They'll say, give us another one.
Yeah, this is one of those that just has lots and lots and lots of little fun factoids. And yes, I said factoids.
Yeah, they're 10% of a fact.
That's right. Oh, boy. So I wonder if anyone will get that.
A couple people will on the Army page, I'm sure. Chuck, we talked a lot about playing cards before in our tarot episode.
Yeah.
And one of the things we talked about was that it's a myth that playing cards developed from tarot, which is what I had always thought, too. I don't remember if I said that on the tarot episode, but it was quite the opposite. And playing cards were around long before tarot cards were. Even though they are related, tarot cards were originally invented as new trump cards, basically. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of evolved into the cartomancy and all that stuff and just took off from there and went on their own path. But playing cards themselves are much, much older. And there's a lot of debate about exactly where the first playing cards were developed. And a lot of people say China. Obviously, China invented a bunch of stuff. And it's possible China did invent playing cards, but they seem to have possibly invented them in isolation, and they may or may not have influenced the playing cards that we trace our lineage back to. Our playing cards today trace its lineage back to.
Yeah, and they may not be, as far as the original Chinese cards go, as old as they think, because, you know, some people point to this game called the Yezi Ge. Yeah?
I'll go with that.
Okay. Y-E-Z-I, separate word, G-E, called the Chinese Leaf Game. And this was like 9th century CE, Tang Dynasty time. And for a long time, people, I think, were like, well, the leaves and the leaf game were pieces of paper and probably cards. But then more, you know, scrutiny has landed on, no, maybe the leaves were just like a rule book or a log book that you wrote stuff down because it was really a dice throwing game.
Right.
Or it could have been more like dominoes and the cards were used in that way, but not used like actual playing cards.
Right.
But we do think we know pretty sure that the Chinese eventually did get their playing cards in isolation in the 13th century, not I mean, pretty close to when Europe got them.
Yeah, so 1294 is the first unambiguous reference to an actual, what we would call playing cards in China. Mm-hmm. Europe, they showed up in 1365. So that is a really, really short amount of time for China to have influenced Europe. That's not where European cards came from. Instead, European cards came from the Mamluk Empire, which I believe we also talked about in the tarot episode too, right?
I think so, in Egypt.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. Like, these cards came about because of, or they got popularized, I guess, because of trick-taking games. Like, not the exact games we play today, like Euchre and Spades and Hearts, and I think Bridge is another one.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of a similar thing where you have, you know, a suit that takes the hand, a.k.a. the trick.
Right.
And there's usually a trump card or a trump suit. And these were like among the very first card games. And apparently in medieval times, they were wild for this game.
Yeah.
For these kinds of games.
They went so nuts that some officials were like, you have to stop playing that. We're going to actually ban it.
Yeah.
We don't get it. And you guys are into it. So we're going to say you can't do that anymore.
Right, but those Mamluk cards from Egypt were pretty similar to what we have today, right?
Yeah, so there's 52 in a deck, which is what we have today. Four suits.
Check.
13 cards per suit. Yes.
Is that what we have? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Because, yes, that's right. So, yes, that 13 times 4 is 52.
Well, I think where I'm getting mixed up is they had a number one card, but they did not have a queen. Is that the swap?
Correct.
Okay.
So, yeah, they had a one card, 1 through 10, and then they had courtesan cards, which we call court cards or face cards today.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, they didn't have a queen. The queen wasn't introduced until the French in, the 15th century said, no, we need to feminize this a little bit, and much for the better. But back in the Arab world, they were like, no, we're not doing that. This is the 13th century. We're just going to go with the Malik, the king, the Naib Malik, which would be the king's like right-hand man.
Sure.
The Thani Naib, which would be the king's right-hand man.
The second AD.
Yes. And that was it. Those were in addition to 1 through 10, those were your 13 cards in each suit. And the suits themselves, the cards had a lot of similarities to what we think of today. Like, they had pips.
Mm-hmm.
Each suit was represented by a symbol that's called a pip.
And I never knew that.
I knew that somewhere in the back of my head. I'm not sure why. But if you looked at one of these cards, one of these very ancient Mamluk deck cards, there would be, say, like 13 or say 8 pips on one card. That's the 8 of, say, cups. If there were 8 cups on there. Just like today. If there's 8 little spades on there, that's the 8 of spades. That, I mean, it follows in a really old tradition, I guess is what I'm trying to say in a really, really clumsy way.
Well, the difference is they didn't write a number 8. They just had 8 of the pips pictured to represent that number.
Right? And we still have that. We just added the number as well.
Exactly. We've got both.
Yes.
And we'll get to there because I think the history of how these things sort of change from country to country as they became the leading manufacturers is pretty interesting.
It really is. They say, we'll take over from here every century or so.
Yeah, and I think it looks like, as far as Europe goes, the Spanish and the Italians were the first to start manufacturing and using playing cards. They were called, are called Latin decks. And they had, as their four suits, the cups, the coins, the swords, and the clubs. But instead of, I don't think we mentioned that a polo stick was the club and the Mamluk cards, Spain said, what the heck is polo?
Mm-hmm.
Our clubs look like something you beat someone over the head with, so that's what we're going to go with.
Yeah, they look like real Captain Caveman type stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
So the Spanish being among the first to start adopting these decks is pretty appropriate because they were under rule by the Moops, or they had been for, you know, just a few centuries before. So they were in a lot of contact with their Muslim neighbors. So for that to be imported to Spain and then probably trickle over to Italy, that makes a lot of sense. And so that's kind of reflected in what the Spanish word for playing cards is, naipes, N-A-I-P-E-S. And the Arabic name for playing cards is naib, N-A apostrophe I-B. So
no, it
very
it.
Clearly descended from it. And that's one of the things that really fascinates me about playing card history is, like, yes, there's neat, like, symbolism and weird stuff going on, but it's all explicable, and it all follows, mm-hmm. like, in this neat tradition that was built upon and changed, but really still kind of kept, like, the general guardrails that it was originally set up with.
Yeah, and the changes are, like, kind of fairly minor,
mm-hmm.
and they usually have to do with whatever made the most sense in that country. For instance, Spain. Not knowing what a polo club was.
Right, but they're like, you can hit somebody over the head with that, so we'll replace right. it with the club.
Yeah, we'll use the smasher.
Right.
And there is some speculation and theories about what these initial, and this is in the medieval society, what these four suits represented.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the theories that kind of makes sense, I think, is that the sword was for the military or the nobles, the cup for the clergy, the coin for the merchants. Makes sense. And the club for the peasants.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Europe, we moved to Germany. They kind of took over in the 15th century as being, I guess, champion card makers.
Sure.
And they replaced the cup with a heart. It's getting a little more like we know it now.
Yeah.
The club was replaced by an acorn.
Which is a type of mast.
The sword becomes a leaf, but if you look at it, it's sort of a similar shape as what we would know as a spade.
Yeah, it's like an ivy leaf almost.
Yeah, and then the coin, because they were nuts about falconry
mm-hmm.
in 15th century Germany, and falcons had bells attached to the hawks, and falcons, I guess. Why don't they call it hawkery?
I think falcons take the cake in falconry. Okay. You know, hawks play second fiddle to it. They're like the Thani Naib to the falcons.
You know, the joke here in Atlanta that I use is whenever we see a hawk or a falcon, and we have both,
mm-hmm.
obvious as evidenced by our sports teams, Emily says, is that a hawk or a falcon? And I said, well, you'd know it's a falcon if it flew into a tree and then hit the ground.
What does that mean?
The reference to the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Like, it was like, I'm flying so high, and then no, right. not anymore. All of a sudden, yeah.
Exactly.
But, I mean, doesn't the same apply to the hawks, too?
Well,
or do the hawks
yeah.
just never get off the ground?
No. You could kind of interchange them.
Yeah.
But anyway, the falcons and hawks had bells, and the coin on the German cards became a bell because they were wild about falconry.
Yeah, it's very cute. The Germans had definitely the most rustic pips of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, an acorn. Come on. That's wonderful. So
pretty
the Germans
great.
Are going along. This is the 15th century. They dominated that as far as the card manufacturing went. And then the French took over in the 16th century. And Rouen, which is kind of in the northwest of France,
mm-hmm.
became the playing card capital of Europe. And one of the reasons it became the playing card capital of Europe, as we'll see, is because they put out so many playing cards. And their production increased so dramatically that it's just mind-boggling. And as a result, the pips that the French adapted are the ones we still use today, even though we have different names. They were the ones who came up with the designs we use today.
Yeah, so they were hearts and clovers, self-explanatory.
Mm-hmm.
They had the diamonds, but their diamonds were represented paving tiles called carreaux. And then the pike, which is the spear tip, I guess, is the spade.
Right, just the tip.
Right, right. But they didn't, you always get me with that. They don't. They didn't call it a spade at the time. But they did a couple of key things as far as what we recognize as playing cards today is they came up with the red and the black colors.
Mm-hmm.
Very big deal to differentiate that and to make card tricks more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, like you said, they manufactured a ton of them, and they did this because they standardized the pips so that they could be stenciled on, and it was a lot cheaper and a lot faster than hand drawing or doing wood cuttings and hand painting these decks of cards, which was super expensive and time consuming.
Yes, and it made the deck of cards, incredibly unattainable to the average person back in the up to the 16th century when the French took over. And once the French took over and started producing these cards en masse, the card playing was just, it just took off like a rocket. People had already loved playing cards, but now more people could love playing cards. And it was because they figured out how to print these things, you know, more cheaply and more quickly. So that's why we use the French card today, just by virtue of the fact that they produced so many that it became like the dominant type of card in the world. And then the other reason I saw is that England eventually adopted the French card and then kind of put their own twist on it, basically just renaming it. And then British colonialism is one reason why so many people around the world use the French deck today. So they took the French deck and spread it around the world.
Yeah, and so the English, like you said, they use the same pip icons. I was about to say logo, but I guess they're icons. Mm-hmm. And they just sort of changed the meaning. So the clover, they went back to calling it the club, even though it's a clover when you look at it. So that's why if you've ever wondered why in the heck do they call that thing a club, that's why.
It's a hat tip to the Mamluk.
The OGs, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The spade, it looks like sort of the head of a spade, a type of shovel. Mm-hmm. But we think that the suit name actually probably, and this makes a lot of sense, is the anglicized version of espada, which means sword in Spanish, because sword was the original suit. And then the diamond, they just called the diamond, but they said, you know what, this has nothing to do with dumb paving tiles. Let's just call it a diamond. And as Dave so aptly puts, a heart is just a heart.
Is that an actual song, or are you making up your own?
I just made that up, but I bet you there's a song that goes, a heart is just a heart.
Boy, you really do that in actuality, huh?
Well, that doesn't really count. It's usually more like, and by the way, we heard from a lot of listeners who do this.
I know. Yeah, you're definitely far from alone.
Yeah, I didn't think I was unique in any way, but it's usually like sung to the lyrics or sung to the tune of another song.
Right. Like, you when know what I mean? You're a heart all the way.
Right.
Like that.
Exactly.
I looked up where that heart shape came from, because if you think about it, our hearts don't really resemble that very much.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, like the human heart?
Yes.
Yeah. And what is that?
I know. I cannot find the original source. There's a lot of debate over it, but it's centuries old. And prior to it, when it first started to emerge, the heart was kind of iconographized. Iconographized? I don't know.
I think you had it right.
Okay. As a kind of a pine cone shape.
Oh, interesting.
Which is a little more accurate, but I like the new heart icon. New meaning centuries old, but the most recent one.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be very funny if it looked like the actual human heart.
Yeah. He just, you know, the guy in Temple of Doom just pulls out like this heart emoji from the guy's chest.
Should we take a break?
Yes, I think we should.
All right, we're going to take a break and get to those face cards right after this.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island. It becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com. All right, so we mentioned the courtesan cards, a.k.a. face cards, is how we know them today.
Mm-hmm.
They represented the royal court, of course. And just like today, back then, they were the champion cards, the most valuable on the deck. We'll get to the ace. There was no ace card yet.
Yeah.
And I think the story of the ace card is pretty cool anyway, so we'll save that.
So great.
But these face cards were all men. Until, like you mentioned before, the French introduced the queen.
Mm-hmm.
And here, to me, is one of the first really fun facts of the episode that I love is for a long, long time, and I guess they don't do it anymore, but in the UK and in British India, they would follow what they called Commonwealth rule or British rule,
mm-hmm.
which is to say that the king and the queen can flip-flop in which one is better in status, mm-hmm. depending on who the monarch is at the time. So if you have a woman on the throne, then the queen is the top card just right below the ace, or until the ace was came along.
Yeah, pretty neat.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, agreed. Something I didn't realize is that for many centuries, the kings, the queens, and the jacks, which were at the time called the knaves, mm-hmm. were actually modeled on historical figures.
Yeah.
Like Charlemagne was the king of hearts, I believe. King David, the guy who killed Goliath, he was spades. Julius Caesar was diamonds. And Alexander the Great was clubs. Had no idea.
Cool.
But like
yeah.
if you look at a super old deck, and I'm guessing somewhere around probably up into the 19th century at some point, you could say, yeah, of course that's Charlemagne. I'd recognize
right.
him anyway.
Look at that beard on King David.
Right.
He's juggling a rock.
Yep.
Should we go through the queens and the jacks, or just suffice
yeah.
to say that they stood for people?
No, I think we should. Give them a
okay.
shout out.
The queens were Pallas of Athena, Judith, Rachel, and Argene, which could be an anagram for Regina.
That's I've seen that
queen.
All over the place. If you search Argene, the only thing that comes up is the card name. So there doesn't seem to have been a historical person named Argene.
Yeah, this is one of those upon research that it's kind of like it's difficult to corroborate some of this stuff, but you see the same facts everywhere,
mm-hmm.
which a lot of times, you know, when we did our episode on how to research stuff well, that can be a big red flag.
Yeah.
But maybe this is the case where it's not so much a red flag and just like lore that people have just agreed upon.
Yeah, because you know, if there is a red flag attached to it, we usually turn it up eventually, and this one just mm-hmm. didn't seem to have it. But yes, I'm with you. It smelled like it, but upon a right. much deeper smell, I was like, okay, this might actually work.
Who were the jacks?
The jacks were Hector, who was the hero from the Greek city of Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Etienne de Vignoles, who was a hero of the Hundred Years' War in France.
Okay.
Ogier the Dane, who was Charlemagne's knight. Mm-hmm. And it, either Judah Maccabee or Lancelot was the knave of clubs. And Judah Maccabee was from the Hanukkah story. Lancelot was one of King Arthur's knights.
That. Yeah. The Maccabees.
So yeah, if, depending on the deck you had, it would basically, you just knew back in the day that if you were playing the King of Hearts, that was Charlemagne right there. It wasn't just this generic, weird looking king. It was supposed to be somebody.
Yeah. A brand name king.
Exactly.
And speaking of brand name kings, the got to talk about the Suicide King.
Definitely.
That is the king that looks like he's stabbing himself in the head with a sword. That is the one, if you're looking at a modern deck of cards, that's the King of Hearts. And that's the one that looks most different from the other kings in that he has four hands and does not have the mustache, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And like I said, appears to be stabbing himself with a sword. For a long time, there was a legend that that's how Charlemagne took his life, but we know that's not true,
right?
Because he died of pleurisy. But what they now think is that the early French decks, Anglo-French decks, had a King of Hearts with an axe above his head, and that just printing over time, the axe went kind of further and further down until it was behind his head such that you couldn't even see the axe blade. And so I guess that axe handle just became a sword, looking like it was going into the king's head.
Yeah, and now that you know, so like that axe was originally, it was like the King of Hearts was captured in the backswing. Like he was about to chop somebody with his axe, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now if you know that, you can see that the King of Hearts is now just doing the same thing with a sword. He's in the backswing.
Yeah, he's about to lob someone's head off.
Right, but not
lob,
his own.
Lob, yeah.
Either one. The important point is someone's head is about to come off. They don't care whether it's lob or lop.
Look at that. No mustache.
Yeah, no stash. And one other thing, the King of Diamonds now is the only one with an axe, which I never noticed before.
I didn't either. I mean, you don't often, or at least I don't often, sit around and look at a deck of cards. Like, I play cards, but I never study them because it's sort of one of those things that's so ubiquitous in your life over the years,
right?
That you don't really it's interesting, might tie into our semantic satiation short stuff coming up.
Nice tease.
But let's talk about that ace card, because it took a while for the ace, and it has a really neat story of how it happened, but it took a while for the ace to become the high card, because when the ace eventually did come along, it was the number one and it was the lowest card. It was the worst card on the deck.
Right.
It was so lowly that they referred to it as an as, which was the least valuable coin in the Roman Empire. But then the French changed all that, right?
Yeah, which is, this is why the ace can sometimes be the highest card in the deck or serve as the number one card. Because if you've never noticed before, the numbered cards start at two. They go through 2 through 9, right? No, 2 through 10. Yes, absolutely. I'm 100% certain. It's 2 through 10. But this as, the AS card, it was named after the least valuable coin in the Roman Empire. And it was kind of like a slang term to kind of just talk about how lowly that one card was. Then the French Revolution came along, and they kind of conceptually pitted the as card against the court cards. And they said, you know what? This lowly one, we're going to make it topple the court, the king, the queen, the jack. That. And now the ace is the top of the heap. This little lowly single card is now higher than any of the other ones. And then, by the way, they also changed the king, queen, and jack to liberties, equalities, and fraternities. So they weren't really into kings and queens around the French Revolution very much.
Yeah, and if you've ever wondered why the ace is the most sort of lavishly decorated card, generally speaking. It's got a cool story behind that one, too.
Yeah.
So the British had a pretty interesting solution to taxing decks of cards, which was, if you were a card maker, you couldn't print your own ace of spades. You had to get that from the government as an official, you know, card of the British Empire.
Right, yeah.
And that was your tax. And they were, as such, they were very highly decorated. They were uniquely stamped to try and prevent forgeries from happening.
Right.
And you couldn't, like, as a card manufacturer, if you were just like, forget that. I'm not going to, we're just going to print our own ace of spades and they'll never know. You could be hung or have your head lopped off or lobbed off.
You could be hanged, you mean?
The penalty, what did I say, hung?
Yeah.
The penalty was death if you forged an ace of spades playing card.
Yeah, there was a man named Richard Harding, which as far as I or anybody else can tell, was hanged for forging an ace of spades. Isn't that nuts?
It, that is crazy to think about. And a weird, I guess, it sounds like a weird way to pull off attacks, but it's also sort of brilliant in a way.
Yeah, but I mean, that's why, so each company had their own design, and it was a lavish design, and that's why still today the ace of spades just stands out as the most lavishly designed card. There was one other thing about that, too. While they were, during that period, I think in the early 19th century to the mid-19th century, the name for those ace of spades was Old Frizzle.
Old Frizzle.
Yeah, I found that on a website. There was a post about the evolution of the history of the evolution of playing cards, written by a game reviewer named Ender's Game.
Oh, and I thought it was going to be Snoop Dogg.
No, but it does have a definite Snoop quality to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's kind of fun. If you've ever, you know, bicycle playing cards are a very popular brand.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the aviation poker cards, personally.
Okay.
But I like a good bicycle deck. If you've ever looked at the Ace of Spades, you might see the number 808 on there. And there's long been speculation that there was some sort of cryptic meaning behind what the 808 is. And apparently it's just a model number because they had earlier decks that were 606s. So there's no like kind of fun hidden meaning to that.
No, and Bicycle is not its own company. It's actually the 8th edition of the U.S. Playing Card Company's designs.
Right.
It's the 8th design they came up with. So that's what that 808 is. And so you'll find that 808 on the Ace of Spades, you said, right?
Ace of Spades, baby.
So that Ace of Spades, in particular, the Bicycle Ace of Spades, has a really storied history as far as world wars go.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently in World War II, the Ace of Spades was considered a lucky card. And so sometimes you'd see soldiers carrying the Ace of Spades around with them.
Yeah, or you see it a lot in the tucked in the helmet in those war movies.
Yes, and this is why most often you'll see it in movies about the Vietnam War. There is a myth that was apparently considered correct at the time that the Viet Cong viewed the Ace of Spades as a symbol of death. The legend was that French cartomancers who had occupied the country previous to the war had basically introduced them to the Ace of Spades as a doom card, and that the Viet Cong were just scared to death of it. That's the legend.
But that's not true?
From what I saw, it seems to not necessarily be true. Now we're coming into the true part. There were a couple of lieutenants, I believe, in Charlie Company who rode into the bicycle, to the U.S. Playing Card Company, makers of bicycle cards, and explained this and said, could we just get decks of nothing but the Ace of Spades? And U.S. Playing Card Company said, you got it.
And for the war effort.
They actually did produce decks of nothing but Ace of Spades for U.S. soldiers to use to scare or intimidate the Viet Cong.
Yeah, and they were called the Bicycle trademarked brand, the Bicycle Secret Weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they would drop these cards throughout villages and the jungles and stuff just to sort of, you know, freak them out,
even though they may not have been. Yeah, but even if it didn't work as, you know, because the Viet Cong were already primed to be afraid of the Ace of Spades, you would probably start to associate it with some bad stuff if any time you came upon like a fallen soldier of yours with an Ace of Spades on his chest laying in the jungle.
Sure.
Even if it hadn't already had that connotation before, I'm sure it developed that connotation pretty quickly just by use of it.
Yeah. By the way, I came across one in my closet the other day, and I came across my box of trading cards.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I popped them out and kind of looked through them real quick. The one thing I forgot that I had, in addition to all those Star Wars cards, and it turns out I have a lot of Star Wars cards, and I looked, and they're apparently not valuable, or not very valuable. But I had a bunch of Superman the movie trading cards.
I remember those, man.
Yeah.
Like they're photographs from the movie, right?
Yeah. Like little scene stills or whatever.
I remember those.
And then also, even though I don't even remember necessarily being that into the show, I guess I watched it a little bit, but I also have some Battlestar Galactica cards, 80s version, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then a fair amount of football, NBA, hockey, but mostly baseball cards.
Right.
That I think are all basically worthless.
You just jogged my memory. I remember now that they had Rambo trading cards for a little while.
Oh, I would have loved to have had those.
The kind of, I guess it was three, where he's like shirtless and shooting like rockets at people.
Isn't that three? I mean, I was a First Blood guy, and then, you know, the Rambos got a little more ridiculous with each one, yeah, they did. You could say. But I stand by First Blood as being a really great movie.
Yeah. It is. It's a good movie, but it's its own. It's a different genre than the other two. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I fully agree.
Although I do have to say that First Blood never produced the greatest chewing gum of all time. Second greatest chewing gum of all time. What's Rambo that? Chewing gum, which is blackberry flavored Big League Chew.
Oh, really?
My God. It was good. And it was second only to Lemon Lime Bubble Yum. The kind that was green on the outside with the yellow center.
Yeah, well, I love that stuff.
There's a pack for sale on eBay, and every once in a while I'm like, would it still work? Could I still chew it? Should I buy that?
Like a toothbreaker.
Yeah, probably, but man, that'd be amazing.
Did the Big League Chew have a little caricature of Rambo on it?
It had like a movie still of him shirtless with a rocket launcher shooting it at somebody and like a big fire explosion in the background.
That rocket launcher.
Yeah. And you'd just put the whole pack in your cheek and be like, somebody hand me a rocket launcher.
It's amazing how many products they marketed at us that were phony tobacco products.
Oh, yeah. I used to do, remember Beef Jerky Chew? It was like a can of dip, but it was shredded beef jerky. Love that stuff. Gum cigarettes that you could puff on.
They still have those. I saw those recently.
Do they really?
And I was like, what? They still make these? And in my local convenience store.
Wow, that's very surprising.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
What about those pink gum cigars?
I don't remember those.
They were just a long stick of gum in the shape of a cigar, and then it had like a cigar band wrapper on it, and they tasted awful. It was the most awful gum there was. Worse than like the sticks that you would get in old baseball card packs. But it was just a different taste, and it was not good gum. But they were still fun to, like, you know, pretend you were a up-and-coming smoker with.
I wonder if there's a candy cane blunt or something like that we don't know about.
I suddenly realized why I started smoking at age 14. I was kind of primed to do that.
Also, before we break, I know we're tangenting on tangents, but I meant to clear up when I told that story about Emily getting a note from her mom to buy cigarettes at the store.
Yeah.
She was like 6 years old.
Wow.
This wasn't a teenage thing because you were like, yeah, I bought them when I was 10 or 11.
Right.
She was younger than my daughter. And just the thought of her going into a store at that age, a child, and getting cigarettes because you had noticed just it doesn't get any more 70s than that.
Well, not just that. It's very Ohio, too.
Yeah.
So I much so, I'm going to coin a new term. That's so Ohio. Okay.
Yeah, I like
We're using that from now on.
All right. Well, let's reel it in, take a break, and we'll come back and talk about the Joker or the Yoker right after this. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com. Hey friends, as every parent knows, kids seem to be everywhere all at once, and it's really tough for even the most watchful moms and dads to protect their little ones from every single thing.
Yeah, Duracell understands this, and that's why they're deeply committed to lithium coin battery safety. Lithium coin batteries power a bunch of important things around people's homes, including things young children may have access to. So Duracell not only educates parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of lithium coin battery safety, they also make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them.
Even Duracell's packaging is child secure and designed to avoid accidental opening. Because they believe their product should provide more than just power. They should also provide peace of mind. You can learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Chuck, you really teased it up right before this ad break.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about euchre, and which is where the Joker came from. You play euchre?
Yeah, we've talked about it on the show.
That's right.
My Ohio relatives introduced me to it,
and
I had to get it re-explained every Christmas because I could never remember the rules.
Right. Euchre is very Sohio.
Yes, it's Sohio.
But euchre came from the Alsace region of Germany, and it was originally called euchre spiel. Okay?
Yeah, with a J-U-C-K.
Yes, J-U-C-K-E-R, spiel.
Whereas what's the euchre card game, how's that spelled that we play?
Today it's spelled E-U-C-H-R-E, euchre, and then Dave points out, like Eucharist, and I think he was trying to trigger in us a mention that he's the host of the hit podcast Biblical Time Machine. That's why I think he put that in there.
Was that what it was? Okay.
Although there's not many words out there that are like the word euchre, but we Latinized it, right, from J-U-C-K-E-R to E-U-C-H-R-E. But originally that J-U-C-K-E-R, in America, people started calling it juker with the hard J, like the J pronounced, not like a Y. And that very quickly became Joker, which was a card that was designed expressly for the game of euchre, right?
That's right. The Jolly Joker, who has always been sort of a court jestery imp like person.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that that's a reference to the Joker in euchre was a trickster who took the tricks of the game.
Because it was the super trump card.
Yeah, exactly. Like the number one trump card. And we're not going to go over euchre, but it's all about the trump cards and descending value of the Bauer and the left Bauer.
Right.
And then the Uber card, which is the euchre or the Joker.
And they call those original trump cards the right and left Bauer, B-O-W-E-R, like they're in the act of bowing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually a bastardization of the German Bauer, B-A-U-E-R, which means farmer in German.
Like Jack Bauer.
Yeah. So it's really interesting to see how just completely mixed up things can get.
Yeah.
When you just change the spelling of a word and even pronounce it the same, but just change some spellings here or there, and all of a sudden you've just completely lost its original meaning and adopted a new one. I find that fascinating. But anyway, to sum this up, the Joker was created to become the best Bauer, the Imperial Bauer, and then over time, because it was associated expressly with Euchre, Juker, it became the Joker.
That's right. And we're going to finish up with some fun poker facts / Las Vegas facts.
Yeah.
Here's one. Barry Manilow has his own blackjack tables.
Yes, we've seen them with our own eyes. Didn't play on them because I didn't want to desecrate it by losing on a Barry Manilow table.
But playing cards and gambling, obviously, is, you know, people started gambling with playing cards a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to poker or really any kind of card game you're gambling with, they wanted to, understandably, not have their cards be seen by other people. Right. So these sort of gigantic icons of suits and these bigger fonts and things like that wasn't working out. So for poker cards, they introduced a few little changes to make this more possible, to hold your hand tighter together. And that is called the squeezer card, which was, you know, the first cards to have a very small symbol at the top left corner, mm-hmm. Indicating the number and the pip,
right.
Or the suit.
Right.
And so that means, that's why when you see a poker player holding that really tight hand, all you need is that left-hand corner barely exposed.
Yeah, and those little, the pip with the number or the letter of the face card is called an indice. Those are indices. And before them, the reason why it makes so much sense in poker, like you were saying, you used to have to spread your cards out wide to say like, oh, there's nine pips on here. This is a nine of clubs. And now it was just kind of marked in the corner, which is great because you're not sharing your hand with the other people. There was another way you could give away what kind of cards you had in old style cards, in that the face cards, the court cards, were printed one direction. There was one direction that was up and one direction that was down. Not like today where they're both up or down. It doesn't matter which way it's dealt. Before, you would have had to have taken that court card and flipped it around if it was dealt to you upside down, and you would have just told everybody at the table, I have at least one face card in here.
Yeah, with total give. And think about the Mamluks. They had to sit there and out loud go, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And they would have to count those pips, and everyone would know you have a six of something.
Right, but that's what the poker players had to do, too. But well, like up until you had the squeezer cards.
I thought they had the number on there. They just had a bigger number.
I don't.
Did they not have the number at all?
No, I don't think they had the number at all until the squeezer, the indices cards were introduced. And there was one other thing about it, too.
Why would they do that? Because other decks of playing cards had numbers on them. Why didn't they just use those?
Like prior to the 19th century?
No, just prior to the squeezer card.
They did. So the squeezer card came out in the 19th century is what I'm saying.
Oh, have they been around for that long?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yes.
And that's the first time that the actual number was printed?
Yes. Before, you would just have nine hearts on there. There you go.
I thought they just did it super small.
No. Well, no. They put it super small, like out of the gate, but that was to so you wouldn't have to spread your cards out and see what you were dealing with. You see what I'm saying?
Okay, I gotcha. Sure, sure.
The other thing that was changed with the indices, Chuck, was remember I said that the jacks used to be called knaves?
Mm-hmm.
And a knave is like an assistant to the royal family, basically, or a knight or something like that. And it's spelled mm-hmm. like knight, K-N-A-V-E. Well, now that you have the indices and you have A, K, Q, or J, if you had A, K, Q, or K-N, which is how they initially abbreviated knave, if you didn't spread your card far enough, you might think you had a king, but in fact you had a jack. And they actually changed knave to jack because of those indices at the top.
Yeah. And they also used to be white on the back. They didn't even have fancy decorations.
That's right.
And it, you know, if you have a, it's very easy to mark a white card with some smudge or something, or it might just accidentally get a smudge or a stain or something.
Sure. You're eating Doritos at a poker game. That's exactly. going to get everywhere.
And then, you know, of course the Dorito card is the ace of spades or whatever.
Right.
And apparently the, Thomas de la Rue and Company was a British printer who was first credited with those, beautiful lithographic designs on the back
mm-hmm.
In the early 19th century. And I did mention Vegas.
Right.
If you dug this stuff up, it's kind of fun. If you wonder how much they switch decks of cards in Vegas,
mm-hmm.
if it's going wild and crazy, they might switch a deck of cards every hour.
Yeah. For that same reason, they don't want them to get marked so that somebody would have an advantage by noticing that there's like a fray on the ace of spades, you know, right corner or something.
Yeah.
The most that they use them for is 12 hours, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's at the Barry Manilow table, which wasn't getting much action.
No. There was another thing, too, that a lot of people point out that we have no idea whether it was purposeful or not, but it's pretty astounding if it's coincidence, right? About the whole, the seasons and the year and the months and all that.
Yeah. 52 cards.
Right.
52 weeks.
Yes.
The two colors, are they night and day?
Yes.
Do those four seats suits represent the four seasons, perhaps?
Correct.
And then what's the last? Just knock them down here.
There's 12 court cards. There's 12 months in the year. There's 13 cards in each suit, and there's 13 full moons in a year. The one that, so up to this point, you're like, wow, that's pretty amazing. This is the one that gets me. If you count every single pip on all 52 cards and add them together, there are 365 of them.
What?
Yeah, isn't that neat?
That's good stuff.
I agree. And there's a pretty cute TED Talk by a guy named Marco Tempest from several years back where he explains all this while doing pretty neat card tricks. It's a good one. You can find it on YouTube.
All right.
You got anything else about cards?
I got nothing else about cards.
We've done tarot cards, trading cards, playing cards. I guess greeting cards is next.
No, yeah, we could do one on the Hallmark Company. Maybe they'll sponsor it.
Oh, that's a great idea. We'll talk to ad sales about that one.
Yeah.
Well, while we're off talking to ad sales, well, we'll hold off on that and instead do a listener mail first.
I'm going to call this just a follow-up as I was talking about people making up their own songs. We heard from quite a few listeners.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like mostly bored dads who do the same thing as I do. This is from, who is this from? This is from Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
He said, hey guys, at the very beginning of the episode, Chuck details how he makes up songs like That's Amaro. My eyes lit up because, dude, I do the exact same thing. Maybe it's a common thing that most people do and they're too embarrassed to admit to, but I've never met anyone else who claims they do it. One example from last night I'm particularly proud of was I was making my 3-year-old daughter dinner, grabbed the box of Annie's macaroni and cheese. Shout out to Annie's. And almost involuntarily, the words flew out of my mouth. And I'll go ahead and sing it in the tune of Knights in White Satin.
Oh, okay.
Shells and white cheddar.
Huh.
Microwave is your friend.
Very nice.
I don't know what's better when there's not much to spend. That's pretty good
great.
Stuff.
Yeah, that was really good. I also had a little social commentary at the end, too.
Yeah, and that's from Jeff with a G.
Because it's Annie's brand, I was expecting him to say something like, it's a mac and cheese night for us. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Whew. Wow, I'm getting on that train, too, Chuck. It is intoxicating, isn't it?
It is intoxicating.
Well, if you want to be like...
Jeff,
and tell us about some amazing song you came up with. Way to go, by the way, Jeff. That was pretty great. You can email us at stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, everybody, are you thirsty? Well, sip on pure, refreshing Richard's Rainwater. Yes, it's really rain. Caught clean before it hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's Rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater or the long-lasting and cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. Sip the sky.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.